Chapter 5.
Is that a handprint?
It looks like it.
I nodded.
It's the only one here, though. Do you think it's some sort of secret door? Could there be a room behind the bookshelf? It's possible. Odin's castle has many strange secret tunnels like that. Can we see through the wall somehow?
Ira inquired, and her eyes narrowed as she inspected the bookshelf.
Is there a spell for that? There might be.
Cass nodded.
But Prana can just walk us through the wall, right, Prana? Of course. I think that will be faster. I imagine so.
Prana said, and she pursed her lips and looked back at me.
I'm ready whenever you are.
I took one more quick look around the bookshelf, but Cass was right. There was nothing there except for one handprint and the footprints below us. I didn't see anywhere else someone might have touched nearby, which led me to believe Aster was correct. There had to be some sort of room behind the bookcase. Right, I'm ready. I nodded, and I held out my hand to Prana. I'll go first.
All right.
The sorceress agreed, and she placed her palm on top of mine. The feel of her skin sent shivers down my spine, and even though it was only a small touch, it made me want even more. I knew what it felt like to have my mouth pressed against hers, and that feeling washed over me as my heart rate accelerated with excitement. From the way Prana's hand clammed up in mine, I could tell she felt the same excitement I did. Of course, neither of us would ever admit it, at least not while we were on a mission, but we could enjoy the feel of it nonetheless.
Wait!
Asta blurted out just as Prana was about to start the spell.
What's
wrong? I asked at the same time, and I dropped Prana's hand as I started to reach for my sword.
What will happen if there isn't a room there? It won't hurt Wrath, will it? No, darling.
Prana smiled.
If there's no room behind there, then he simply won't be able to cross into it. I'll be honest.
Ira chuckled and shook her mane of red hair.
I've wondered the same thing. I still don't know a lot about magic and how it works. It's a complicated art form. But if you have any questions, always feel free to ask myself or Caspier. She's a very talented sorceress as well. Thank you.
Cass bit her lip to contain a smile and looked down as her face turned red.
Ready?
Prana asked, and she looked at me once more. Ready. I nodded and held my hand out again. The sorceress took my hand in hers, but this time it was all business. She closed her eyes immediately and mumbled something, and golden sparkles of magic emanated out of her body to cover mine. With my hand still in hers, I stepped through the bookshelf. Part of me was concerned there wouldn't be anything on the other side, but I stepped right into another tunnel, and a quick glance down revealed the footprints from the other room definitely led through here. I'm in! I called out as I let go of Prana's hand.
What do you see?
It's a tunnel, and the footprints continue over here.
You're sure?
Oh, they're definitely the same ones.
All right, I'm sending everyone else through.
One by one, the girls and dragons started to make their way through the bookshelf while I looked around the small tunnel for any other signs someone had been there. I still didn't see any blood, which was strange, considering the amount that had been on the ground just hours before. But I figured Aster was probably right, and they must have used a spell to clean it up. There was no other way they'd be able to get the entire area so clean so fast, especially not with the floor being made of ice. I did see one handprint on the wall near where I'd come through the bookshelf. It was in nearly the same place as the one on the other side, which told me the frost giants had either built an invisible handle of sorts, or they had some enchantment on this bookshelf and used their hands to make it work. Either way, we'd gotten through it, and I had to smile about that. They clearly didn't think anyone else would be able to find this place, since they'd gone to such great lengths to hide it, which meant we were on to something. I wasn't sure what, but we were going to find something at the end of the tunnel. I was sure of it.
Ah, it's so dark in here,
Cass said once everyone was on my side. I guess I hadn't noticed. I frowned.
Svas, you think you could help us out?
A second later, the little dragon breathed out a small flame, and she held it steady so we were able to see all around.
There's another handprint here, just like on the other side.
Yes, I saw that. I nodded. This must be an enchanted door of some sort.
You're probably right, though something like that would take some skill. Really? Seems like it would be a simple spell. Actually, no.
Brenna shook her head.
The spell's quite complicated. Granted, it doesn't take much magic to accomplish, but it's something the sorcerer would have to work for. I see.
Ira murmured with interest, and I could see the gears clicking behind emerald green eyes.
I remember working on making locks with my father. It was certainly a skill that took some time, though the spells didn't take much magic, just like Prana said.
So whoever made this door has some sort of talent as a sorcerer.
Right. We haven't found out much, but every bit helps. Should we follow the footprints?
Yes, I nodded. We don't know where they'll lead, though, so everyone stay very close.
Of course.
Cass agreed, and she looked at me with determined violet eyes. I took a deep breath and put my hand on the hilt of my sword. Then I started down the long tunnel with the girls lined up behind me. Svas's light guided the way, but there was nothing as far as I could see. The tunnel was longer than the one leading to the room we'd just come from, and it felt as though we walked forever. With Jotunheim being such a maze of tunnels and caves, there was no telling exactly where we'd come out once we got to the end of it. For all I knew, the tunnel was leading us directly to the center of the mountain, where there were even more frost giants with dragon eggs waiting to be sold. I hoped that wasn't the case, but it was certainly possible, and from the way the hair on the back of my neck stood up, something terrible had to be at the end of the tunnel. After what seemed like a mile, a faint blue light appeared ahead of us.
Is that the end of it?
I don't know. It could be a room, too.
You think so? That would be a long tunnel to lead to another room. One would think criminals would usually like to hide their behaviors and dealings in the dark. True.
Cass agreed before she pursed her full lips and frowned.
Though it seems they are often far more open about it than people usually give them credit for. Yes.
Asta nodded.
Ira and Rath were explaining that last time we were here. Yes. It also seems most criminals aren't the smartest characters. At least not the ones who get caught. It doesn't look like another room.
Asta whispered as we drew closer to the light.
I think it leads out to another part of Jotunheim.
Shh! We can't be seen, but we may still be heard.
Sorry.
Cass murmured before she bit her lip, but I put my hand on her shoulder and smiled at her. I just didn't want us to be caught, and she knew that. As we drew closer to the light, it seemed the two women were right. The light didn't appear to lead into another room at all. Just through the end of the tunnel, I could see frost giants moseying about as if it were another part of the market. Before we even made it out of the cave, I noticed something different about the frost giants there, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Once we made it to the exit, I slowly stepped outside, and my women followed just behind me. And we stared at our surroundings in awe. Oh, we'd clearly made it to the wealthy part of Jotunheim. Huge houses were set into the ice cave walls, which extended at least 100 feet into the air in this particular section. Ornate carvings covered the outside of the homes, some of which boasted pillars and balconies as well. Then I realized that was what was different about the first giants I'd seen walking around. They were in very expensive-looking clothing. A small family walked by us, and I took in the extravagant outfits each of them wore. The father had on a dark blue tunic with silver pants underneath, and large silver rings adorned nearly every finger, each with a different jewel encrusted in the pale metal. A small dagger was also attached to the male's hip, though it was obviously for show rather than use. The weapon was beautiful, but the entire handle of it was encrusted with jewels, which no doubt made it incredibly difficult to actually fight with. The mother wore a long silver dress that trailed softly behind her, and her dark blue hair was pulled up into an extravagant updo. A large silver chain adorned her neck, and at the end was a beautiful sapphire, nearly the size of my fist. She wore matching earrings and a bracelet as well, and her makeup was exquisitely done, so she looked like she could be the queen of the realm if I didn't know any better. Behind the mother and father trailed a young boy, wearing a light blue tunic and matching shorts underneath. He walked with his nose buried in a book, and every so often his mother turned around and lightly touched his shoulder to direct him to follow her. The small family was clearly wealthy, and they no doubt lived in one of these spectacular homes around us.
Wow!
Asta breathed when the family had passed us, and she looked around with wide yellow eyes that stood out in contrast to all the blue around us.
This is incredible. I didn't even know ice could be carved in such intricate patterns. I've certainly never seen anything like it. You haven't?
Ira asked, and her red eyebrows pulled together.
I would have thought you would have come to this area before, maybe on a mission for Odin or something. No.
Brenna shook her head.
We do not visit Jotunheim very often, and certainly not the cities beneath the mountains. It's much too dangerous. I suppose that's true. The footprints continue out here.
Gas pointed to the ground where the glowing footprints led forward to a nearby street. They do. I pursed my lips as I thought.
What's wrong?
Well, I just don't understand what they did with the bodies.
What do you mean? Isn't that what we're going to find out?
Maybe, but we walked all the way through the tunnel and didn't see any signs of bodies. What did they do? Take them out here?
Yes, I see what you mean.
Prana nodded.
It does seem highly unlikely. There must have been a drop-off point somewhere along the way we didn't notice. Unless elves were involved. If that's the case, then maybe they hit the bodies magically.
That would make sense, but then why would their footprints not show up? Or could these be dwarven footprints?
I don't think so.
Prana inspected the ground and shook her head.
It seems more likely the enchantment wouldn't work on dwarves because of the nature of their magic.
Oh. So this had to be a frost giant?
I believe so.
Prana nodded.
In which case, there was only one.
Asta pointed out with a furrowed brow.
That seems odd, too. Whoever was there was probably just supervising what was going on. I bet they called the dwarves in to do the spell, then left and came here. But why wouldn't they leave the same way they came in? Maybe they were coming from doing another trade or something, and after that they headed home. You think the frost giants who are doing this live here?
Asta asked with wide eyes.
I wouldn't doubt it. It's often those in bad dealings who come across plenty of coin.
True. I nodded and turned to Asta. Remember the man we dealt with just last week? He lived in a huge palace.
And the dwarf house we broke into was incredibly nice as well. It just doesn't seem right that bad people get to be rich and have nice things.
The elf girl frowned, and her full lower lip jutted out adorably. Well, no, it's not right. But we're going to fix that. At least for a few of these assholes.
We're going to rob them?
Asta grinned. What? I chuckled and I shook my head slightly at her response. No! Well, maybe. But not right now. But eventually.
After we kill them.
Ira shrugged.
Oh, good.
The white-haired elf woman narrowed her eyes and nodded.
They don't deserve such wealth. We can take it and use it to help put an end to the dragon trade.
I had to laugh at Asta's diabolical plan. I didn't think I'd ever heard her talk about others in such a way. But she wasn't wrong. These assholes didn't deserve the wealth they had, especially since they'd no doubt earned it through illegal business dealings and the harming of innocent creatures. Still, the way she phrased it made me smile, and I thought how even when she was being cruel, she was still kind. Her whole plan was to steal from these wealthy assholes and use the money to free more dragons, a sentiment that separated her from the other thieves who might come after the wealthy frost giant's money only to serve their own purposes. Well, we'll do our best to do just that.
Shall we follow the footprints?
Let's go. I nodded as I put my hands on the hilt of my blade again, and then I led us down the icy street until the footprints took a left. We dodged frost giants walking on the road who were unable to see us, and I took in the view of the huge, ornate homes we passed by, until finally we came to a huge manor at the end of the street.
Is this it?
Asta breathed, and she looked up at the massive building. It seems so. I nodded and let out a deep sigh as I stared at the incredible craftsmanship of the ice home. The house was built right into the side of the cave, so only the outer wall was visible, but it was spectacular. There were two large double doors with male frost giant warriors carved into the ice, and large pillars in front of the entrance held up the large balcony above us. There were no windows on the outside. Instead, the entire front of the home was carved with intricate portrayals of mountains, forests, and rivers. It was absolutely beautiful, though I had no doubt the money to pay for it had come from some questionable sources. The footprints we'd been following led right up to the double doors, and I turned to Prana and gestured ahead of us.
It looks like we'll need your help with this one, too.
Of course,
Prana said, before she glanced back at the grand estate and narrowed her light brown eyes.
This place may be smaller than Odin's castle, but it doesn't lack in detail, that is for certain.
Yes, whoever created it was a skilled craftsman, though I find it hard to appreciate their work when I know it's for those involved in the dragon trade.
I find it difficult as well. As Asta said earlier, it's such a shame wealth seems to find its way into the hands of those who wish to do no good with it. It's true. We just saw a poor part of Jotunheim not that long ago, and now here this home is, and it probably cost more than half the goods in the marketplace just to make it. Jotunheim, unlike Asgard, is not known for taking care of its citizens. Neither is my homeland of Alfheim.
Asta added with a little frown.
That's true as well,
Prana said softly, and put her hand on Asta's shoulder.
Each realm has their fair share of issues, but I do wish the leaders would, at the very least, make sure their citizens were fed. Maybe, after we put an end to the dragon trade, we can work on making peace with the other realms.
Asta smiled innocently.
Then Asgard could explain how they help their citizens and how it works in their favor. Maybe.
Prana agreed with a smile of her own, and then she walked up to the double doors and laid her hand on them. I made my way up to Prana and grabbed her hand once more. Gold sparkles of magic floated around the sorceress, and she guided me through the door and let go of my hand once I was on the other side. I had my hand on the hilt of my weapon as I looked around, but I didn't see anybody whatsoever. I was in a small entryway that led out to a huge open area with two huge staircases leading up to a second floor landing. The entire place was ice, but it wasn't the same as the rest of Jotunheim we'd been in. The floor was made of a light blue ice instead of the darker blue that usually adorned the cave system. Small, delicate designs were traced into the ice as well, and they seemed somehow trapped underneath the top layer of ice, as if they'd been carved before new ice was laid over it. If that was how it was made, the entire process would have taken days, if not months, without magic. The intricacy of the details on the floor were incredible enough, but the more I looked around the room, the more I realized how immaculate the home was. There were tapestries on the walls depicting frost giants in battle, always winning, of course. Even if that wasn't the case, the losers of the battle would never admit it, not if they didn't have to. Even the staircase was ornately carved, and the ice of the railing twisted all the way down in a beautiful spiral pattern. I heard Asta gasp from behind me, and I turned round to see her and Prana walk through the door and look around.
Is this someone's home?
As I believe it is, I nodded.
It's so beautiful.
The elf girl frowned.
It almost seems like one of the great halls of Odin or the elf king's palace.
I know, I sighed. We need to figure out who lives here, and more importantly, what they're up to.
Do you think they'll be known to the council?
Gas asked Prana.
I can't say for sure.
The blonde sorceress shook her head.
But whatever we find, I'll have my assistants look into it.
I appreciate that, I told her, and I looked at where the footsteps led up to the stairs. Everyone, stay quiet and follow me. The girls stayed close behind me as I walked, but Bla hopped down from Prana's shoulders and made his way to the front of the pack. He crept along next to me, and I could sense his curiosity and his anger at the whole situation. His feelings mirrored my own, and I pursed my lips as I led the girls up the stairs and toward a large door at the end of the hallway. I was astounded the sculptor had managed to make two floors completely out of ice, especially when I thought about how they were most likely carved directly into the side of the cave. It had to have been an incredibly painstaking and time-consuming process, and if I wasn't here on such terrible business, I probably would have been able to appreciate it more. Once we got to the end of the hallway, Prana came forward to walk us all through the door, but before she touched it, I heard something inside, so I placed my hand on hers to stop her. The sorceress's eyes locked on mine, and a flush came over her face as she looked down and gently pulled her hand away. My heart rate sped up in response, but I quickly pushed that feeling out of my mind and focused on the voices behind the door. They were clearly male voices, and it sounded like there were at least three of them, though I couldn't be sure if there were more or not. I focused for a moment to see if I could make out what they were saying, since it was safest for us to stay in the hallway if possible, invisible or not. But it all came across as mumbles, and I knew we'd have to go in. I nodded to Prana, and the blonde sorceress grabbed my hand again and guided me through the large door into a small room. As I looked around, I realized the room wasn't actually that small, but it was filled with frost giants who took up the majority of the space. There were seven of them altogether, and each seemed to be bigger than the last. Three of them stood along the wall to my left, with their arms crossed as they listened to the conversation of the others. From their demeanor, scars, and plain clothes, I guess they were the guards for these assholes. The rest of the men were dressed in extravagant clothing, and they sat in huge dark blue velvet and silk chairs, with silver arms and legs that looked like they could barely hold the weight of the huge creatures. Each man wore more jewelry than the last, with sapphires, rubies, and occasionally an emerald thrown in. They also each held a small glass in their hand, filled with what looked to be the Jotunheim mead the girls and I had tried just yesterday when we were here. There was a large desk in the far corner, with a ceiling-high bookshelf behind it, stacked with various books of different colors. They were the only truly colorful things in the dark blue room, though even they were mostly different shades of blue and silver. The girls slowly lined up behind me, and I did a quick count to make sure everyone was there, only to realize Blah wasn't by my feet anymore. My eyes darted around the room until I found the little dragon on a small table directly across from us. All four of the nicely dressed frost giants were between us, and my eyes nearly bulged out of my skull as I resisted the urge to yell at the misbehaving reptile. Immediately I saw what he was going for. On the table was a dish filled with some sort of Jotunheim candy, and the little dragon was trying to get some. Usually he was more professional than this when we were actually on a mission, but food was his weak spot, and he was still a baby, so I had to forgive him. But first I had to get him down from there. I caught the little dragon's eye, and he tried to look away, but I shook my head fervently and pointed to the ground. Blah rolled his large blue eyes, hopped down from the table, and walked directly through the frost giant's chairs in front of us to come sit by my feet. We'd been so close to them, I just knew one of them was going to stretch their legs out and inadvertently kick him, but he made it through just fine. I wasn't sure I could say the same about my heart. It nearly beat out of my chest as I watched him scurry through their feet. Once he was back with the rest of the group, I took a deep breath to steady myself, and then I focused on the men in front of me and what they were saying.
"How we should do it,"
the tallest giant of the group said. He had curly black hair that hung to his shoulders, vibrant yellow eyes, and a scar that took up most of his left forearm.
"Perhaps we should get some more eggs to sell him,"
another man said. This one had short, dark blue hair, dark blue eyes to match, and the most ornate rings out of the bunch of them. There were at least three rings on each finger, and every last one was encrusted with jewels. Seeing how freely he wore so much hindering jewelry on his fingers made me think this guy had never seen battle, and when I looked him up and down for a weapon, I realized he didn't have one. None of the men sitting did, actually, which told me I'd been right in that the three men to the side were their guards. This meant three of the rich males were more than likely guests here, while one was hosting. Now I just needed to figure out which one. The man hosting was probably also the man in charge of this whole operation, considering how extravagant his home was, and if we could figure out his identity, Prana might be able to do some digging for us.
"You think he'll take more eggs so quickly?"
the third man asked, His face was grim and serious below his bald head, and a silver ring glinted in his nose. He was also the shortest of the group, but also the most muscular, and as I looked on the ground, I realized it was his feet we'd been following.
He needs all the eggs he can get for what he's got planned,
the final man said, and I realized he must be the boss. The other three men seemed to listen more carefully to what he said than they had when the others were speaking, and I understood why. The last giant's voice was deep and powerful, and it seemed to fill the room and nearly vibrate off the walls. He wore a simply designed silver tunic, but it was obviously made of incredibly expensive fabric, and while only a few rings adorned his fingers, each was encrusted with a large jewel that showed off his clear wealth. His wide face was serious as he stared at the others, and his deep blue skin seemed even darker than his friend's. His piercing red eyes nearly sent a shiver down my spine, and long silver hair hung down his back, and his full blue lips pulled into a sneer.
"We still need to figure out how to get him to allow us to deliver them,"
the bald man said.
"We were just attacked. That should be explanation enough of why it's unsafe for him to send anyone here."
"Seems the misfortune of some of our guards is good fortune for us,"
the silver-haired leader said. My breath caught in my chest when I realized they were talking about the Elf King. The man we followed must have just gotten here, so the ice chamber we'd killed the frost giants in the day before had to have just been cleaned up before we got there. I supposed it made sense they wouldn't notice for a few hours. I doubted these guys routinely checked in on the men doing the real dirty work. They looked like the type to try and keep their hands clean.
"About the attack,"
the silver-haired giant said, and he looked around the table with his piercing red eyes.
"It's all cleaned up?"
Yes, it is.
The bald-headed giant nodded to the guards standing on the other side of the room.
"We made sure of that."
"Good. The last thing we need is someone stumbling upon a mess like that. And the bodies?"
The bald-headed man nodded to the guards again, and one of them stepped forward and lifted his chin slightly before he spoke.
Yes, we've been disposed of, sir."
"How?"
The silver-haired giant raised an eyebrow at the man. The guard's eyes darted back and forth between the leader and the bald-headed giant, as if he were confused about whether or not to answer. It was clear he was used to reporting to the bald-headed man rather than the boss here, but that hesitation wasn't doing him any good.
"What's your name again?"
the silver-haired leader asked, and he stood up and walked around his chair. I pressed back against the wall as the giant walked toward us, but the girls and I were as close as we could possibly get against the door, and we had nowhere else to go. The giant passed in front of us with less than an inch to spare, and my heart rate accelerated in response to his closeness. He wasn't able to see us, but if he bumped into us, he'd certainly know something, or someone, was there. And from the way he was talking to the guard, I didn't think we wanted to be on the receiving end of his wrath. My women and I were all skilled fighters, and we had the dragons on our side too, so we'd be able to take him down, no problem. However, we needed to keep him alive for the moment to figure out what these assholes were planning. They were plotting something against the Elf King. We just needed to figure out what, so we could intercept it.
"Yeah, it's Varbin, sir,"
the guard stammered out, and he stood up a little straighter as the silver-haired leader walked over to him.
"Varbin."
The boss nodded and pursed his lips.
"Family name, no?"
"Yes, sir,"
the man said, but his gaze went straight past the leader as if he couldn't stand to look him in the eye.
"Well, Varbin?"
the leader said with an eerie smile, and he put his hands on the guard's shoulders so he could straighten his tunic.
"When I ask you a question, I expect you to answer me. Don't look at him. Look at me. Do you understand?"
Yes, sir.
Varbin stuttered.
Good.
The leader smiled again and lightly smacked the giant's cheek with his large blue hand. The conversation itself didn't appear particularly threatening, and even the gestures the leader made were small, but there was a certain air of authority that came with them, and the entire interaction sent a shiver down my spine. This was a man who knew how to get what he wanted, and something told me he'd worked his way up to that position. He clearly wasn't going to be the one to actually hurt anyone who crossed him, but I had no doubt he had plenty of guards more than willing to do his bidding. The two guards behind Varbin would no doubt turn on him if given the order to, and it seemed Varbin knew that, because he looked around warily as he stepped back into line with his fellow guards. The leader made his way back to his chair, sat down, and turned back to Varbin once more.
"Let's try this again."
He smiled.
"How were the bodies disposed of?"
"We burned them, sir, and froze over the blood spill with a fresh layer of ice."
"Good, good."
He nodded and turned back to the men around him.
"We won't be able to use that tunnel any longer, and I'm sure it will soon be occupied by vagrants. We wouldn't want any of them notifying the authorities about such matters."
"Of course."
The curly-haired frost giant agreed.
"Now, back to the issue of the king. I like the egg idea. How soon can you get it done?"
"A few days should do it,"
the curly-haired giant replied.
"You'll do it in two,"
the leader said matter-of-factly.
"Yes, sir,"
he agreed without hesitation.
"We'll need someone to distract the king's lackey so the other can steal the spell to hatch the eggs,"
the silver-haired giant added with a flippant wave of his hand. Asta nearly let out a quiet gasp, but I reached to my left and quickly put my hand over her mouth. The white-haired elf girl stared at me with wide yellow eyes, but I just nodded and slowly removed my hand.
"Sir, do you think it will be too dangerous to try and steal this spell directly from the castle?"
the bald-headed giant asked.
"Where else do you suppose we take it from?"
The leader raised a silver eyebrow.
"We'll hit him where it hurts, and all at once."
"Sir?"
the bald-headed man asked, and his brow wrinkled with confusion.
"We'll steal the spell, and we'll take back all the eggs we've sold him, plus the ones we haven't."